and sides and Kings were hurt. McCallum was one on the site where almost, 90% of the flowers are gone, period. So you just have to look and see where you are. So that being said, we do have a whole lot of varieties blocks that just opened up this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, especially yesterday, Sunday. Stuff really opened up. Pollination was going strong. And we've got a big crop of some varieties like Gala for sure. And so you just need to evaluate. I haven't been in New York to look at where you guys are in the valley in the past week and a half. So you're going to have to do it yourself. Actually, I would point to the to your e-alert. Dan Donahue was out yesterday, and he did some very good observations of what was going on up and down the valley and looking at injury potential, and he put some great notes in that. So it just came in last night. You may not have seen it, but I would look at that because Dan's got his pulse on a broader area than I do for you guys in New York. But my message is look at your percent bloom, and then you can make some decisions. So the question is also, let's talk about some basics. Why bloom thing? We've been doing this for 7-8 years. I worked with lots of people on bloom thinning. Terrence, of course, from Cornell. And part of the process of looking at precision thinning, how can we get more accurate? How can we get some thinning done early? For us, Honeycrisp is always one that was hard to get return bloom. We wanted to eliminate that off year. And the other one for us that's really tough is Fuji. We have a variety, Suncrisp in New Jersey, probably not grown too much in the valley, although I know some guys have it for direct market sales. Very hard to get return bloom on unless you get some thinning done early. The other major reason for bloom thinning is really not for thinning. It's for helping to get some hormone in there early with a PGR material, primarily either NAA or NAD. We've worked with both, so that we start to differentiate flowers earlier in the process. The work that Pollyanna Francicotti, I can never say her last name, we just call her Polly, who was at Cornell with you guys for 3 years while Terrence was gone. She did her PhD work slicing flowers in the summer, looking at, in the spring and summer, looking at when fruit buds differentiated for Honeycrisp, Fuji, and Gala. And the big revelation to me in growers is that it starts much sooner. 45 days after bloom, Honeycrisp have already made most of their buds for the next year, according to her work. So starting to get that hormone on early at bloom and petal fall really is an advantage. So I've done replicated work on bloom thinning and return bloom on Honeycrisp in one block here in New Jersey for 4 years. And this is the fourth season. It actually was a block that ended up being hurt with some cold, but we could still get flower counts. We actually had a full crop 4 years in a row by doing the process. And the process was thinning close to the numbers we needed, looking at about 1.5 to 1. If I wanted 100 buds, 100 fruit on a tall spindle tree, being about 150 flowers or no more. So we would prune down to the number so there's less to do. And then we used NAA as fruit tone, but there's other NAA products at bloom. And then at petal fall, we were NAA in 7. That was kind of our standard. And then we measured fruit and kind of determined if we needed to make a later application. And all 3 years, we didn't need to make applications after the bloom and petal fall on this block of Honeycrisp. Now, that's not the case, everybody. You've got to make those decisions block by block. But the advantage of doing that early application of PGR as NAA was that we had a great return bloom coming back because we did all those things. Had the tree pruned correctly, had the numbers down, and didn't overcrop the tree, and had good quality fruit. So what I would say is you have to make the determination block by block. If you've got if you read my last comment on that, poor pollination, low numbers of bloom because it's the off year or injury, you're probably not going to do bloom thinning. There's no reason to do it. There's a lot of unknowns. And then you look at the weather forecast for the next week. Peter, I'm assuming your forecast is the same as ours. Today we see 65, and then the rest of the week we're 60s, and it drops to 50s for the end of the week. For really the next 10 days, we don't have any temperatures even in the high 60s. So pollination is going to be a little tougher for the next week and a half. So bloom thinning is just going to be where you know you've got a real block of snowball bloom, no injury. You had some pollination yesterday perhaps, and I think Dan alluded to that in his little summary that there might be some gala blocks for you guys that would be candidates. But that's my take on it. I'm going to shut up because I didn't want to make too much formal, but that's kind of my comments. Unless there's questions, we can talk some more, Peter.
Yeah, Wynn, thank you. And really the crux of all of this is to present information that's going to bring about some questions on the part of the growers to be able to engage in conversation. So I'd like to just open this up at this point for folks to make comments or bring to the table some questions that they might have. So you'd need to unmute yourself. That little microphone on the bottom left, you just click that and just run.
I don't know, Peter, your pictures were so good, there's no questions. So.
Hey, Peter, this is Laura McDermott, and I have a very berry, you know, a berry-centric and selfish question. I haven't been able to get down into the Hudson Valley, the lower Hudson Valley, and I'm just wondering if anybody has mentioned or seen or cut open any blueberry blossoms, wondering about a freeze event down there. Did that... Any idea? You can just say no if nobody has. It's no problem. I was just hoping to get a little more information.
Dave, don't you have blueberries at the house?
Hi, Laura. I do have blueberries. They're not yet open. Flowers getting close. I haven't cut any to see what they look like.
Okay. Thanks, Dave.
Laura, this is Wynn Kogel. I would tell you that our blueberries in New Jersey were hurt with that. First couple events, the Thursday and Saturday, way back in mid-April, they were 2 weeks advanced, 2.5 weeks advanced in South Jersey. And it was cold. It was 26, 27 from South Jersey all the way up. And they've got some substantial injury and blocks. One of my growers has – we have a lot of upland blueberries in North Jersey on heavier soils. And one of the blocks that my grower, that was his coldest block in the middle of the farm. For some reason, that was down to 23 degrees. And he uses overhead frost protection on that. So he turned it on at 32 and saved the crop. But they were suffering from cold injury in New Jersey as well. So you do need to look is the point.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, guys.
Yes. This is Joe Papilia. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Joe.
Yeah, what would be the correct timing on the gala bloom thinning with this cool weather coming in this week? I mean, what would be the best, you know, full bloom, 50%, 75?
I think we usually look at like 75 to 80%, and you're not going to get a lot of thinning at bloom normally, and if it's cool, probably even a little less. NAA is going to give you some activity. I always think of my friend Phil Schwalier, Michigan. We have a PPR meeting every March, and he had probably 5 or 6 years where their normal thinning time, it was never out of the 60s, and he would always count on NAA to give, you know, they would just put it on anyway and get some thinning. But I think you'll get some flower part, not flower part, flower differentiation as well. So I would say somewhere 70-80%.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, good morning, Wynn. This is Mike Baisdow. Quick question on NAA versus Amethin. What kind of efficacy you might see putting on at Bloom?
Hey, Mike. Good question. I had that question for one of my growers because he inherited about 20 pounds of Amethin from another grower that got out of business. So he wanted to use it up at Bloom if he was going to do some Bloom thinning. About 3 years ago, we did a bunch of work with Amethin NAD, looking as a substitute for 7. So not straight NAD alone, but we looked at many combinations. We looked at, I was working on Gala. Dwayne Green did it on, I'm not sure. I think he was on Macintosh and some other varieties. We were trying to look to expand the label. If you read the old Amethin label, it talks about varieties like Ben Davis and Golden Delicious is probably the newest variety on that old label. I don't remember. So I did it on Gala. I had 2 years of data on Gala, and I had a Bloom treatment alone. Then we did Bloom in Petal Fall. We did Bloom with looking at Max Cell at Petal Fall or Max Cell at the 8 to 12 millimeter stage, so like a double application. And I pulled up that data, which I don't have right here to do. Maybe I could find it when somebody else gets on if you want to look at it. But basically, it gave us very mild thinning, exactly the same as NAA. Didn't overthin. So I also conferred with my colleague, Dr. Green in Massachusetts, a week ago. They asked the same question. And he feels as well that it's pretty much almost the same as NAA. So we use 10 parts of NAA Frutone based on tree row volume per acre for bloom thinning on Gala. And we would say the same. We always use the full rate of NAD, which is 50 parts. NAD is like a sister cousin to NAA. It's almost a similar product, but it's even more mild in its activity. So it's been around for 50 more than that, 60 years. So, you know, it's pretty useful material. So I would say, Mike, to answer your question, you could use it in my opinion, interchangeable for NAA at Bloom.
All right, great. Thank you.
I might just comment, Wynn, that our AccuWeather forecast up here is saying we may get down to 32 on Friday night and Saturday night. And unfortunately, as I've been watching it, they're lowering that temperature a little bit every day. So we may not be out of the woods yet.
Well, I saw that too. I put that out last night in my little blurb because yesterday morning it was 32, 33, and then last night it was down to 31. So you're right, it kept creeping. So I have a feeling you guys may be in trouble the end of the week. We certainly can, you know, we don't want to see any more cold temperatures either. So you're not out of the woods. You know, you're not going to overthin the bloom thinning. If you've got a snowball bloom and there's no injury to date, I don't think you're going to get a whole lot of activity if you put it on something like Gala in the next couple days. But my sense would be the activity you get would be in the beginning of the week, because at the end of the week from Wednesday on, it gets in the 50s and even colder, Dave. So if you're going to get any activity, it would have to be in the next day or so, would be my guess.
Well, and obviously the forecast set far out Friday, Saturday aren't very accurate, so
no.
Maybe it'll come back up.
No, so it's very cautious if you what to do this year for sure. Don't have an exact answer. I always tell everybody just bloom thin, but I'm not saying that this year. This year you've got all these other factors to look at and a lot of unknowns, to be honest. So
any other questions for Wynn?
Did we lose Peter?
No, I'm right here, Wynn.
Any other questions? I didn't see your picture. I thought you went to get coffee.
That would have been a good idea. So Wynn, I'm going to stop your screen.
Yeah, sure. I'll stay around in case somebody comes back with a question. We can talk later. I'll be around.
All right. That's perfect. So with that, there's, you know, any given year, there's just going to be the challenges of when to thin, what to use. And this is a year that's just a little more challenging, I think, than other. I was using blocks in which I was looking at a number of different varieties. The block had some overhead, I'm sorry, not overhead, had fans to reduce the injury, and in those blocks where they ran the fans during those cold days, it seemed like there was significantly less damage that we're seeing. Over in Modena, so quite a ways from the river, but nonetheless, it seemed like moving that air around during those cold nights likely made a big difference. So with the remainder of this, I'm going to move through some topics that that just came to my attention when I was out in the field. This is a block of Crimson Crisp, high density block at the lab. You can see we have plenty of dandelions competing with pollinators for their attention. And as the Crimson Crisp move into bloom, the bees are really working the dandelions. So as many of you know that have been working on apples for quite some time, mowing these before we put on any applications to reduce the amount of competition that we have with our apples or even pears, now that the pears are sort of waning in their bloom, probably be a good idea to try to turn the bees' attention to tree fruit. Tarnished plant bug is also a growing problem, I think, in a lot of our orchards. Dave Rosenberger pointed that out last week with regards to broadleaf weeds being a primary host for plant bug species. It's not just tarnished plant bug we're seeing, but we're seeing lots of other insects species that seem to be feeding on fruit and causing different types of injury. Pyrethroids tend to be one of the best management tools because of their broad spectrum nature, residual, but for efficacy against plant bug, they seem to be at the very top of the list. There were other materials like Calypso, which is a neonicotinoid that did a great job on it. We've tried Belief in a number of different trials at the highest labeled rate using different timing strategies, beginning at tight cluster all the way through to pedicel first cover. We did not get good results with that material at the lab. It might be worth investigating a little bit more, but it does, at least in the recommends, suggest that it has high efficacy in some of the other studies that have been done. So we are still seeing these galls in full force. Dave, you have some comments going into this week with regards to sea apple rust. The galls are probably, if you just look at the gall on the right, it looks like it's beginning to wane a little bit. The gall on the left, a lot of spores, so we're seeing still a lot of activity for cedar apple rust going through bloom. And then I'll touch on some insect related issues. We did see the first black stem borer in Walden. I did talk to folks in Western New York where I think black stem borer is a huge problem for them. And they're suggesting that petal fall and first cover when they females are mated, burrow into the trees, that timing seems to be almost ideal for trunk applications. The use of Laura's band post-bloom when the fruit are beginning to set can be really problematic with regards to residual. Laura's band later in the season for trunk sprays, those fines get up into the fruit, cause rejections of fruit in larger retail stores. So the use of a sale and pyrethroids in the trunks of the tree is probably a good idea closer to the harvest. Newly planted trees, a lot of new trees in the ground, very susceptible to dogwood borer as well as black stem borer. Don't forget these guys. As we move later on into the month, we get into European corn borer. So keeping an eye on the trees, making sure it's wet in time, which is where we are now. that these become much more stressed when they have wet feet. That stress produces in the tree ethanol, and the ethanol is highly attractive to black stem borer. So keep an eye out for boring in the trunks, as well as the toothpick frass on dry days to determine whether or not you have black stem borer. Certainly putting traps out is a good idea. However, they're not a good indication of their movement into trees. Mating disruption for dogwood borer should begin soon if it hasn't been done already. And then moving into that concept of codling moth mating disruption is also something we're going to need to start considering. Codling moth in the Hudson Valley has become a real problem. Tarnished plant bug, I mentioned earlier, the pyrethrum bloom are your best bet. For plum curculio, there's a host of materials as we move toward petal fall, but there's nothing we can use during bloom to really address plum curculio if it starts to move in colder weather. As Dave suggested, as did Wynn and others, looking at the forecasts, lower temperatures mean that it's less likely for curculio to begin moving into the orchards. And plum curculio tends to require some
overnight. Hey, Peter. Peter, I think you need to mute everybody. You got a bunch of background coming from some phones, I think.
Okay. Let me take a moment.
It's getting hard to hear you.
To do that real quick.
Sorry.
All right. I've got to get into a different screen. Hang on just a minute.
If anybody has a question when he's done, you can unmute yourself. But if you mute everybody, then I think you'll be in better shape. There's a lot of background.
Thanks, Wynn. All right, there we go. Should be a little bit better. So as we move into higher temperatures beyond the end of this week, we're likely to see more insect feeding. To date, in the blossoms that we've looked at and on the leaves that we've scanned or brushed, we're really seeing low levels of paracilla this season. And as soon as I say that, I know that the lid's going to break open on this. But up until now, really minimal feeding on blossom clusters from the lepidopteran complex. Now that's not unusual, but certainly in years where we have cool temperatures, the LEP complex are much slower to really hit the ground running. And this year we're seeing really viable leaves, viable fruit across much of the valley. So the lepidopteran, like oblique banded leaf roller, red banded leaf roller, green fruit worm have really not been out. Once the temperatures begin to increase, we're going to start seeing more and more feeding on fruitlets and on leaves, undoubtedly. But it doesn't look like it's going to be happening throughout the remainder of the week. I was looking yesterday and really didn't see much of that on the two warm days that we had thus far. So the models for predicting management is something that we're probably not going to be using in the near future. We do know generally that oblique banded leaf roller will feed during the season, and you can manage them on the trees during the bloom period using the BT products. They work really well. If you're going to use Bacillus thuringiensis, which is the active ingredient in these products like Dipel, you want to put them on at close intervals, probably 5 to 7 days. Ideally, you put them on during periods of cloud cover. That's hard to manage actually, but they do a lot better when they don't have direct UV light. And the frequency of the applications just seems to be a really good fit. So for collie moth, as I mentioned earlier, there's a number of products for mating disruption, as for lesser, as for oriental fruit moth. Putting that out now before collie moth is in flight is essential. Once collie moth begins to fly, there's a pre-mating period, there's a few days before they actually mate and start laying eggs. But once the males and the females are out and they find each other, all bets are off with mating disruption. So if you don't get them on before collie moth flies, your expectations are not going to be met. Mullein plant bug is an insect that usually comes on during the bloom period and moving into petal fall. It hasn't been a problem the last 4 or 5 years, but in some years where we have extended bloom, mullein plant bug can be an issue. You can apply a sail during bloom for that insect. And what you're looking for is raised bumps and looking for the insect in the trees. They're relatively easy to see. They're a really bright green color, and they stand right out, especially in Red Delicious and some of the Delicious strains. And as I mentioned, for obliques, the materials that you can use during bloom, like the BT materials, are available that have relatively high efficacy. So we're talking mostly about palm fruit, but the indicator for plum curculio injury is really stone fruit. So if you have peaches, plums, cherries, apricots, nectarines, they're the go-to to determine whether or not plum curculio is out. I like to have a sentinel tree available so I can take a look at the cherries and see where they are. And you can see that very traditional plum curculio sting in the bottom right-hand corner of a developing cherry. If you're trying to manage your stone fruit at the same timing as apples, the stone fruit are always going to get hit by plum curculio. And Bob Fix up in Columbia County has a cherry tree that he always goes to prior to making his first spray for plum curculio. It's a really good indicator for the presence of curculio as well as the onset of overposition. They'll overposit into stone fruit before they will apple, and it's a good trigger to go in and make an application to your apples. So with that, Dave, I'd like to bring the topic back to diseases and see if you have any comments with regards to disease control. There we go.
Peter, I don't see anything that's terribly outstanding. There was a bit of discussion from surgeons' blog last night about a potential fire blight infection up in the Red Hook area. We were almost at 80 degrees yesterday. That triggers a lot of heat units. If there had been rain last evening while it was still warm, it posed a bit of a risk, but I think that risk was really pretty minimal because we hadn't yet gotten to 100 in the EIP units on NUA, which I consider a fairly critical threshold for fire blight. So if you had a lot of fire blight, you got rain last night, maybe on real susceptible trees, a spray would be worthwhile this morning, but really, I don't see that as a significant risk factor based on the weather data I looked at last night. It's going to cool down. In my experience, fire blight infections don't do well with rains that come at the end of a hot period. You really need rain during that heat period to trigger it. So a rain last night, both because it was at the end of the heat period and because we hadn't yet had enough to bring us to 100 EIP, which is what Mary Blight used as an infection level. I'm not concerned about blight. I think scab control has been fairly easy this year. Again, we're going to have a stretched out bloom, so I'd encourage people not to try to go all the way from pink to petal fall. You're going to need a cover somewhere in the middle. Pick your timing and hopefully you can get one bloom fungicide on maybe towards the end of this week if you were covered at pink a few days back. Quince rust obviously is a concern at pink and petal fall, but again, we covered that last week. I think with the weather conditions, it shouldn't be a huge threat this year. So I guess I don't see anything in particular out there. If we do get a frost on Friday, Saturday, and that's still a big if, I think, as I mentioned, there is a potential for getting Pseudomonas blossom blast in particularly pears and maybe some of our apple cultivars. You know, how important that is, it usually affects only a small percentage of fruit on apples. Or it may kill the spurs. On pears, I've seen entire 4-foot limbs have every spur killed in a bad year, but that's also pretty unusual. I don't think there's any registered control for that. You could try copper, but Pseudomonas is often copper resistant. I think if you put on strep for fire blight, that would suppress the population, but Pseudomonas populations can pop back pretty quickly in cool weather. So just an alert, but I don't know that there's anything we really can do on for that. And it may not evolve into a real threat, especially if the temperatures move up a bit. So other than that, Peter, I guess I'd just reiterate that photo you showed of dandelion. I think when growers see dandelion like that, they should make a mental note or take a picture with their iPhone, put it in their calendar to pop up in late October, November as a reminder that that's the kind of orchard where you want to get a 2,4-D spray on in the fall, and you won't have those dandelions next year to compete with the trees and do all kinds of other bad things. That's it from my end, unless there's questions.
Okay, Dave, thanks. We're going to open it up to the floor for questions. Please hit your mute button to unmute if you have any questions for any of the participants, even folks that you might see on the participant screen. If not, we're going to close the meeting out, but just want to make sure that everybody has a chance to engage and ask questions as they see they need to.
This is Mark Wiltberger. I just wanted to point out that we did see some bud damage with at least one of the late bloom events in April. I believe just early budding varieties, inland sites. I know Janet was actually slicing them up. I don't know if she has anything to add or that's it. The accurate summary.
Yeah, that's pretty much, I guess, the gist of it. It did seem kind of interesting to me that I didn't necessarily notice that the earlier varieties always had worse damage than the later varieties. It seemed sort of spotty across the board by location and by earlier late variety, which was unexpected to me. So I don't know if anybody has any comment about that. But that's kind of what I saw from my sampling.
And one site you saw lateral damage, right?
Yeah, again, it seemed just real spotty. Some sites had almost complete loss of viable flowers in certain pockets. Some sites had no damage at all. And again, this was a pretty... it wasn't like a comprehensive survey by any means. It was just sort of as I was walking around, I kind of cut into some flowers here and there. But I was real surprised by how spotty it seemed like it was.
Great, thanks, Janet. I'm just gonna share that one slide again that Donna Chimovich brought up. And that is sort of the differences here in variety of injury of king and laterals. It's it really is likely to be, as you mentioned, Janet, block by block, and some of that is going to be based on variety. It certainly seems like Empire, generally at our site, as well as Fuji and Honeycrisp, took a pretty big hit with regards to king blossoms. And the loss of the king does not mean that we're not going to get a good crop, but it does change our approach to thinning with regards to trying to conserve the king. If the king is gone, then focusing on lateral thinning is going to be really critical. So any other questions out there?
I might just comment, I don't know if any folks are reading the information out of Pennsylvania, but I think Jim Shoup had an interesting commentary a week or so ago where they documented variations in frost damage from the top of a block to the bottom, I think maybe 150 feet, I can't remember, difference in elevation. And it went from no damage at the top to significant damage partway down and almost no crop at the bottom, as I recall. So in addition to cultivar, the effects of elevation can have a huge impact depending on the kind of frost events we're experiencing.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks, Dave.
Wynn Kogel going to jump in on that, following up Dave, and that's exactly right. There's a huge difference in the same orchard in elevation. I've got one grower that had a lower spot. It actually had a wind machine at that spot. That's where we saw 100% of McCowan's, or not 100, probably 90, and 150 feet up the hill with other apple blocks, you know, minimal injury. So you can't just check one area. You've got to check your elevations and every block and every variety. We saw Empire. We saw Mutsu seem to take it pretty good. Some McCowan. So there's a lot of variation by variety and elevation, Dave. That's exactly what we saw too.
Elevation effect, I might add, when I started my career over 40 years ago, there was apple grown in areas where they frequently only had apples in the tops of trees, but since we don't have 25-foot trees, those sites are no longer viable.
Guess the same would hold true with deer injury. You could always count on the tops of the trees. The deer can't climb very well here in the east. All right, it's 6:50. We're going to bring the meeting to a close. I really appreciate everybody coming on board. Any last questions before we close down? All right, well, thanks so much. Wynn, I want to thank you, especially for your comments and insights into thinning. And Dave, of course, it's always great to hear from all of the different comments that you make on the insight you've had over the years. So thank you everybody for joining. And at that, we're going to bring the meeting to a close and have a great week and be productive.
Thanks, Peter. Take care. See you.